Now that was one hell of a first round Stanley Cup playoffs.
There's really nothing better. A lot of overtime, a few game sevens. Was it three game sevens? And even a couple overtimes in game sevens. I'll take it all year long.
Yeah, absolutely. There wasn't much missing for the fans of just good hockey, playoff hockey. Had a little bit of everything. We had some high scoring games. We had some spectacular saves, and of course, we had some fisticuffs.
Yes, just pure emotion as always in the playoffs.
Which is exactly what we like here on Throughway Puck, episode 6, halfway to a dozen.
We'll lose count pretty soon.
Yeah, Otto joins us from Utica. Dan is here in Amherst, and we are hoping you are enjoying what we've put together so far, the first 5 episodes, and hope you like it so much so that you subscribe on iTunes. Also, check us out, barrelofsports.com.
Barrelofsports.blogspot.com, I found out the other day.
Okay, well, I've been
just
saying
straight Barrel of Sports does not work.
Well,
we probably should. But for reference going forward.
Absolutely. So, round one of the playoffs. Otto, I guess we'll put it this way. What stood out to you the most? Was there one series, one player that stood out to you, positive or negative?
If you're going to go single game, I'm going with Game 7 last night between Boston and the Toronto Maple Leafs. The comeback in that game was incredible, to see a team come from 3 goals down, 10 minutes left in the game, tie it up, and win it in overtime. It just defines what this sport in the playoffs is supposed to be about. It's just amazing to me that these things happen, and they're supposed to happen, so I like it.
Yeah, you get the 3-goal lead, and you had a guy in Fratton who had a breakaway, went to make it. I think at that point it was 4-2. Could have really put it away at 5-2. Couldn't connect on the breakaway, and you could just kind of see it slowly start rolling together for the Bruins, and you could see the Maple Leafs were gripping their sticks just a little tight, and I thought, if it gets to 4-3, I think we're screwed.
Yeah, and I sent you that message about right after they scored the second one. It said if they can score, it could be an epic comeback. And
they did.
I didn't know if it was going to keep going that way, but it did. And it was just fun to watch. And I'm not a fan of either team in that one, but it was a game I watched intently all the way through the end.
It was a very, very hotly contested game. It was a very good series overall. I thought they're two evenly matched teams. But it also was just one of those things that I talked about in the AHL matchup when we were talking about Rochester and Toronto, the Marlies this time. Everything had to align for the Amerks to score in that series. And that's the kind of how I felt for the Maple Leafs in this series. I felt like they had to give so much effort, and if they had won that game, I think they're going to take a quick exit in round two, because they had just drained themselves. I mean, you had guys playing way above their heads in minutes that they didn't belong or even really deserve, that were still keeping them afloat, and I think the magic would have kind of run out anyway.
Yeah. Another thing from the first round, it's a rant I've been on for quite a while. It's the fans in these arenas. I get that your team is losing. Let's see, what were the two examples? My two examples were Ottawa.
Nope, Montreal.
Yeah, that series. When Ottawa closed out the series in Montreal, yes, it was a blowout, and you don't want to see your team lose, but by the time that game ended, it was empty. I don't know if at the beginning of the season anybody really expected Montreal to be the 2 seed in the East. And yes, it's a disappointment to lose in the playoffs, but to not be around, you know, all the teams do the handshake at the end. They all do a stick salute to the fans. And to not stay around, you pay all the money for the tickets. Why not take advantage? But B, just why not stick around and show the team that you support them even though they did lose? It's something I've never understood. In Utica, we see it a lot at the UC games, and the place will empty out even if UC's winning by 2 goals with 5 minutes left. It's not something that I can wrap my head around as a fan.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just the society we live in, because growing up going to games, I didn't have the option of leaving early with my father keeping stats, so you're there till the very end, but there's one story that my father always told me, and a lot of guys who have been around the Amherst ever since even Don Cherry was a coach here. And it was the season Cherry was coach, and they didn't have an affiliate, and they had Cherry had basically gone around to the Rangers and the Bruins and I believe the Maple Leafs. And there might have been another NHL club. And he basically said, give me the guys who aren't going to make your minor league team. And a guy came through, Battleship Kelly, John Winsent came through a couple years later. Another guy on the team that I got to know actually was John Bednarski. And they were all these bums that supposedly weren't going to get anywhere in professional hockey. And he got them to play a team game, and the fans realized, even though they weren't the most skilled team, I believe they ended up missing the playoffs, and they needed to win the last game of the season to make it. And they're losing their last game by 3-4 goals. And the entire War Memorial in Rochester stood up, gave him a standing ovation for the last 5-6 minutes of the game, knowing that they weren't going to make the playoffs, but they recognized the effort and the heart and dedication that the players had put forth to get even to that point. And so that's always kind of been the way I was brought up. Like, you respect guys that put forth the effort, and you give them the proper homage, salute, whatever, you cheer for those guys.
Just the acknowledgement that you appreciate what they're doing. And looking at it was the Rangers Washington game 7 that was the other one that emptied out real early. Another blowout win. The game was over, but the fans left and didn't stick around for the end of it.
Well, on the opposite side of that coin, I was watching, I don't know about what feed you were watching last night, but the CBC feed for the Bruins-Toronto game, they were commenting on how, even after the second period, when I believe at that point it was 2-1 still, going into the third, they were literally, I believe Glenn Healy said the fans did not even sit down during intermission. They were singing and chanting and just, let's go Bruins, all these other chants, and...
Yeah.
I can't help but think that helped the Bruins carry it up, pick it up a little bit, even when they did go, they did come out and kind of fall on their face at the start of the third.
They made a lot of comments, too, about how it, after the goal to put Toronto up 3, they said the place did start to empty. But as soon as they got that goal, you could see everybody standing on the glass. I did notice that. Uh-huh. I didn't hear the commentary as much, but...
Yeah. It was enjoyable to watch. You could tell they were into the game. So you noticed the fans. The biggest thing I noticed throughout the entire playoffs, and this is going to be a little bit of a rant here, Otto. I, as an official, I don't officiate hockey. I'll admit that. But as an official, the one thing that you should always expect out of an official is consistency.
Yep.
And I think that the NHL referees have dropped the ball in that case. Meaning, during the regular season, if a game gets to 4-1 and a team sends out, we'll use the Bruins and the Sabres for example. If the Sabres got up 4-1 and the Bruins go and send out, Marchand and Lucic, and after every whistle they're trying to get their team into it by getting into a scrum or getting into, giving a guy a face wash or whatever, the linesmen are all over that, and if they persist, the referees are sending them to the box, one guy, and they're giving somebody a power play to knock it off, because nobody wants to give up power plays. And so that has allowed teams who are more finesse-based to get into the playoffs, and because they're capitalizing on those power plays, and they're scoring based on finesse and not so much brute strength and team toughness. Not that I'm against team toughness. I love me some team toughness. I'm all about in-your-face hockey. But I see it as an unfair advantage that now when we get into the playoffs, teams like the Bruins, And even the Rangers last night it felt to me like they controlled the game and the referees let them control the game. As far as there was, I don't know if you saw it, three consecutive whistles. It was either Lucic or Marchand. You know, both of them were out. And after the whistle, there's a scrum behind the net, and they're the ones instigating the scrum. They're the ones persisting. And you would see the defenseman, whether it was Gunnarsson or Phaneuf or Kessel. At one time, it was Jeffrey Lupo, and he was just laughing at Marchand. And Marchand's punching him in the face, and Lupo's not even looking at him. You know, he's just laughing, like, okay, ref, like, we going to get a power play here? Because he's punching me in the face for literally no reason. And you could hear the crowd go bananas because they love seeing that, as yeah. any crowd does in the home
ice. And that's the way the Bruins are built, too, as you were kind of alluding to there.
Yeah, and so it allowed the Bruins to get going, whereas if the referee had popped him with a two-minute roughing penalty or whatever, it probably at least stemmed the tide a little bit for the Leafs. In the Rangers game, I can't remember who he hit. I want to say it was Erskine or Pody, but I'm not positive. Callahan, it was late, and B, it was from behind, and he's not going to get anything. He didn't get a hit, a penalty on the game. He probably won't get a suspension. And to some people's point, it doesn't look good in the league when Patrick Kaleta makes a hit very similar, or in my opinion, a little bit less dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous, but less severe, and gets, you know, a four-game suspension, but yet Callahan, who's a New York Ranger, and he's the captain of the Rangers, biggest market in the league, doesn't get anything.
Walk out without anything. Yep.
It doesn't look good. So, it's more of a fairness point. It's, believe me, I would love...
Consistency.
Fairness, consistency thing. I love watching guys beat the piss out of each other and just, you know, like, if it was up to me, I would have a scrum almost after every whistle and just let them go.
We'd be able to play the regular season like they've been officiating the playoffs.
Exactly.
If it was up to us. But the point is, that's not the way it's done. You have to build a completely different team for the playoffs, or to win in the playoffs, than you do to win in the regular season.
You have to have enough talent during the regular season to win on purely on talent. And effort, I'm not, you know, but to win in the playoffs, you need to have that toughness element that also has talent. And that's where the Bruins are going to succeed. And the Penguins went and got guys like Aginla and other, you know, and Morrow, who will add that. You know, the Kings have Dustin Penner, or not Penner, Brown. Penner's a marshmallow, but Brown is the one I'm thinking of. Brown, Richards is that way. You know, the Rangers went and got Dorsett, and then they already have Asham. And these are guys that, you know, some of those guys are legitimate top six forwards, but the other guys are borderline third, fourth liners, and they're going to become huge key factors because they can basically run wild in the playoffs.
Yep.
And, you know, we saw, I just read you the quote from Ovechkin before we started recording, you know, He thinks that he kind of insinuated that it was a league had the fix on a game 7 and wanted the Rangers to win. You know, but to his point, the Capitals don't have anybody that, I mean, they got Matt Hendricks, but he's a middleweight at best, you know, and the Rangers.
Nobody to match up with the big guys.
Yeah. And, you know, Callahan and the Rangers came in there and they did the dirty work, which during the regular season would have been penalized. And in the playoffs, it was not.
Yeah, it's something to keep your eye on as the playoffs continue now, too. I mean, you can't change what's been done. You just hope that they get it at an equilibrium going forward and that it's the same for both teams.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a fairness and a consistency thing, and you get a false sense of where teams are because of the referees trying not to make themselves a major factor in the game by calling a ton of power plays or whatever. They made themselves a factor by allowing teams to run wild.
Yep.
So, that being said, recap of our picks real quick from the first round. Rant over. during the first round, as far as our point scale goes, We get 3 points for picking the team in the correct number of games they win in. So, for example, in the Ottawa series, I picked Ottawa in 5. I get the 3 points. Otto picked Ottawa in 6. He gets 1 point because he did get the correct team, but not the correct number of games.
You hit on Pitt there, and we'll go ahead and preview the first Eastern Conference.
Yeah. So Ottawa won that series over Montreal in 5. Ottawa possibly getting Jason Spezza back, not necessarily for games 1 and 2, but possibly when they come back to Ottawa. They will face Pittsburgh, who both of us picked in 5 games over the Islanders, and it took them 6 games, so we weren't too far off. But I think we were both surprised by the level of difficulty that the Penguins had with the Islanders.
Definitely. The question, the one way you can look at it where it's not a surprise, is they had the same problem last year with Pittsburgh, Philadelphia. Philadelphia obviously was a more talented team last year than this Isles team, but they ran into the same problems. They got taken off their game by physical play. Marc-Andre Fleury can't figure out the playoffs for some reason. He does enough to win in the regular season, but just an ugly, ugly series again this year. Had to be replaced by Volkoon in this one, who won the final 2 games of the series, and you just wonder where they have to go going forward with that. I don't know. Their offense is there. They showed it multiple times, but not being able to take care of the Isles puts a big question mark out there going forward.
Yeah, it was one of those series where the Islanders just, I found myself rooting for the Islanders even though I picked Pittsburgh, because you just like seeing teams who bust their ass to get rewarded for doing so. And maybe it was just me, but I felt like Malkin and Crosby weren't factors in the series. But when you look at it, I don't know what, I know Crosby had a couple goals and some points, but Malkin had 9 points in the series in the 6 games. So
Ginla had a whole bunch of points too. So you heard a lot early of where is he, but when you look at the stat sheets, he was there. He was there all the way through.
Which just goes to your point of that their goaltending really became a big issue, because that made it look like they weren't doing enough. I mean, if they're winning games 4-1,
then see empty points. Yeah. But when they have to win 5-4, 4-3, 6-4, when they have to score that many goals to win, you don't want to have to rely on that. Guys, in all reality, they're not supposed to score 6 goals in a series in the NHL. Or 6 goals in a game in a playoff series.
Any other team that has their goaltender implode like Fleury did is probably out in round 1.
Absolutely. And last year they were.
Yep.
Because the problem with the Isles is they were very limited. They had Tavares, a couple other guys to score goals, but really when you look at it, beyond their top 2 lines, they weren't looking to score many goals, which is, I think Ottawa's going to run into the same problem. They have the perfect build to do the same thing. They have the build to get this Pittsburgh team off their game by playing physical, getting in their heads, get to the net, make plays in front, but I don't know that they are high-powered enough to match. It'll be just like the last series. Pittsburgh will be able to score some goals, not like they did against the Islanders. Craig Anderson is going to be a much, much more difficult opponent for the Penguins to score on, but we'll see what they can do offensively if they can catch up to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I actually think Ottawa's got a good matchup for Pittsburgh, or is a good matchup against Pittsburgh. I think that Ottawa has the goaltending, first of all. Anderson, in my opinion, if he was healthy the entire season, he's in the Vezina consideration. I think that the Senators will not be intimidated by Crosby, Malkin, you know, Aginla, Moore, all those guys, they're not going to be intimidated by the big names, because even though they don't necessarily have those big names, they know that their core and as a group, they can win and beat teams that might have those superstars, which they don't.
And, you know, this is one we talked about two episodes, maybe three, when we previewed the AHL playoffs. We had discussed that a lot of these guys were the core of that Senators team that went on that, or the Binghamton Senators team that went on that nice run. So you have a lot of playoff experience, albeit not NHL playoff experience, but they're a core of guys that know what it takes to win.
Absolutely. And Anderson, in my opinion, has the ability to steal some games.
Yes.
So
yes.
Do you want to go through all of those, or do you want to go into your point style?
We'll go through the point style here, all right. I guess.
Why don't you educate our listeners as to what we're going to be doing for the next round.
What we're going to do for the second round matchup here, we're going to compare these the two teams in each series against each other in three different categories. Offensive power, defensive power, and goaltending. You'll get 10, we'll call them goals, to divide between the two teams, and whichever one you think is stronger, you'll assign more points to. I'll take this series here, for example, and look at my sheet. So Pittsburgh and Ottawa. Offensive power, I think this one's all on Pitt. We've seen Malkin score, Crosby score, Aginla score. They have defensive guys that can score. So on the offensive end of the zone, I think they're much, much stronger than Ottawa. So of the 10 total goals, I'm going to give 8 of them to Pittsburgh. That leaves the other 2 for Ottawa. Then on the defensive side of the puck, or defensive zone we should call it, because defense could also be on the offense. But looking at it, Pittsburgh brought in some solid guys on D. They've got their core. They've got a Calder finalist on the blue line for them. Ottawa, much closer in this one. Not quite to the level, I don't think, of Pittsburgh. There, I give 6 of the 10 goals to Pittsburgh, the other 4 to Ottawa. Goaltending is where there's a big swing in this matchup here. I give Ottawa 7 of the 10 goals, leaving the other 3 for Pittsburgh, and that's even depending on who plays in goal in Game 1 for Pittsburgh. Then you total up the number of goals you give each side. In this case, my goals add up to 17 for Pittsburgh, 13 for Ottawa. Based on that, I would expect Pittsburgh to win the series. That is equal to what I picked them. I have Pittsburgh in 6 games for this series. I think their offense is too much to overcome, but if Anderson can steal 2, and then Ottawa can fill in, keep an eye on him.
I think we should change it to pucks, considering we're a three-way puck, so we'll give them 10
pucks. I like
pucks. We'll go 10 all pucks.
Right. So my matchup hockey is 17 pucks to 13 pucks.
All right. My picks for this round, offensively, I think that the Penguins are only rivaled by Chicago, period.
Agreed.
I think that their depth, their speed, their talent is just, if everyone's healthy, then I think they're just head and shoulders above everybody except for Chicago. So I'm going to give Pittsburgh 7 pucks, and giving the other 3 to Ottawa. Ottawa does have some offensive capability, especially if Spezza comes back. That might even slim the gap a little, cut the gap a little bit.
But, I would agree with that.
But so I'm going to go 7 pucks for Pittsburgh, 3 for Ottawa. Moving on to the defense, I looked not necessarily just the 6 D-men, but the team concept of defense.
Yeah.
Okay. And so in that case, I'm going to give Ottawa 6 pucks because I think they just have a good team defensive system. They have some centermen that are big and pretty solid in the faceoff circle. And thinking especially of Zach Smith, I'm looking for him. He'll probably get a lot of minutes against Crosby or Malkin, depends on who the bug-eyed walrus sends him out against. But so I'm going to give them 6. Pittsburgh's kind of underwhelming defensively. I mean, Letang, yeah, he is a Norris candidate, but he hasn't been, like, Letang last year, I thought, was better than Letang this year. And Doug Murray's a little, you know, kind of slow back there. Englund's kind of slow back there. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the speedy Ottawa forwards give them some trouble. And in net, I'm going to go 7 pucks to Craig Anderson versus the 3 of the Vaucun Fleury mess. Basically because while Vaucun and Fleury are pretty good goaltenders, they've shown in the past, especially in the playoffs, that they'll give away games. And I don't think they're going to have that leeway against a guy like Anderson. So that gives me a total of 16 pucks for the Ottawa Senators, 14 for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I'm going to go with Ottawa in 6.
Wow, I like it. I think one of the keys to watch in this series is to see if Ottawa can carry that momentum and uphold that emotional wave that Montreal series was for them. It was a big win. It was a big rivalry. If they can carry that in, I think they'll be in good shape. Another thing to watch is the Carlson-Cook drama to play out in this one. They did play in the regular season with Carlson back, so it shouldn't be anything overwhelming, but it is something to keep an eye on. In the regular season, Pittsburgh was 3-0 against Ottawa, one of those wins coming in overtime.
Well, Carlson's not going to go after. I mean, you're not looking at somebody who's like, okay, you knocked me out for a couple weeks.
It's an emotional thing for the fans. The fans will get behind it more than anything else.
Yeah.
As far as the fans, teams are concerned, it's a done deal.
The fans and their owner. The fans and their owner, who's like Dr. Magoo or Mick Magoo back there, you know. He's just
still waiting for that forensic evidence. So.
Still want to know what a sub sock is.
Yes.
So the other matchup is going to be between Boston and the Rangers, and Boston gets into the second round by defeating the Maple Leafs in Game 7 last night. We already got into that pretty well in depth. Boston needed to come back from a 3-goal deficit in Game 7, and also you know, had, what, 2 goals in the last minute and 20-something seconds last night. So they got through. They were hurting for offense for most of the series. Tyler Seguin's kind of sleepwalked through that series. And it looks like they started to heat up at the end there. They'll meet up with the Rangers, who also needed 7 games to beat their first-round opponent, the Capitals. And they kind of had a cakewalk in Game 7. Quick question. If you were a fan, you're obviously a Minnesota Wild fan, so I'll use the Wild. Would you, in Game 7 of the Wild playing Chicago, or anybody for that matter, would you rather have the Wild sleepwalk through the game like the Capitals did and get trounced 5-0? Or would you rather them go into an overtime game like the Leafs and lose like the Leafs did last night? Those are your only two options.
I think I'd rather see them lose in the overtime game. It absolutely breaks your heart to see it happen, but to me, getting blown out of the building, you kind of lose some respect on that end as well. So to me, it's definitely the losing in overtime. Close game where you're in it, you have a chance to win.
I completely agree. I mean, leading up to it, it's a good game, and you're on the edge of your seat watching this thing. And even in overtime, you're on the edge of your seat. And to know that your team was that close to going out of the next round is so much better than watching your team get kicked in the balls, because that's basically what happened in Washington last night. So, who called that Ovechkin was pretty much going to get shut down by Girardi and McDonough?
I believe that was you, because I believe my comment was he was getting going a little bit. So,
a tiger cannot change his stripes.
But yep. I'll just and we're hoping for the same thing with Team USA playing Russia. We'll get to that after a while here.
Never been a fan of Ovechkin. Never liked the way, you know. I thought he was headhunting a little last night. I don't know about if you saw any of that.
Through a lot of the end of this series, after he couldn't get any more points and he was still getting 9 shots a game, he got a little physical, but not necessarily in a good or clean way.
He reeks of sore loser in my opinion. But so we got Boston and New York. You want to go first this one?
We can do it. Do you want to sum up the first round results as far as points go?
Sorry about that. Yeah. So I picked New York in 7 perfectly. You picked New York in 6, so you get 1 point. I get 3. Toronto choked one away last night on me, and that would have given me the point instead of you. So you get the point. You had Boston in 6, getting the series win over the Maple Leafs.
I think the key to this series is actually going to be games 5, 6, and 7 of the Boston-Toronto series. Boston has played a ton of games down the stretch. They had a game rescheduled because of the happenings in Boston with the marathon. They played the day after the last day of the regular season in the NHL. They played a lot of... Their games were scarce at the beginning of the first round here and then finished up strong with back-to-backs Sunday, Monday. So I think not closing out when they were up, 3-1? Not closing out the series when they had the chance the first 2 times is going to be the key to this series for me. Yes, the Rangers went 7, but the Rangers were in a better position at the end of the season. So I think when it comes down to it, I think the Rangers are going to take this series in 6. We'll kind of go through the breakdown of this one with the pucks again. As far as the way the offense is currently playing, I give 7 pucks. I don't know if I agree with myself right now. So I'm going to go 6 pucks to Boston. I think their offense is clicking a little bit better than the Rangers, with the exception of the Game 7 for the Rangers. We're going to go... So that will go 6 to Boston. I was going to go 7. The Rangers didn't seem to have much going for them lately. Nash hasn't gotten going. Richards is playing on the 4th line. They traded away Gabrick, who probably wouldn't have produced much in the playoffs anyway. But they just... Their stars that are supposed to score goals aren't scoring, and they're getting just enough to get it done. So I didn't want to give New York many points, but Boston, as you recapped early there, is having the same kind of struggles with their own right. So 6-4 on that one. Defense, I give 6 pucks to the Rangers on this one, based mostly on their team defensive style. Block shots, get back, play in the zone, get the puck out, and then go play offense. Boston plays similar. I don't think it's quite as strong. So 6 pucks to New York, 4 pucks to Boston. Goaltending, also going to New York. I wanted to give more pucks to Henrik Lundqvist on this one. I gave him 6, but Tuukka has been solid in the playoffs so far and was solid all year long, so he gets the other 4. A stat for Lundqvist there. He had... He had 3 losses in the first round. In 2 of those losses, he gave up a total of 3 goals. Both of those games went into overtime. They lost 1-1 and 1-2-1. So he stood on his head and did exactly what the Rangers needed him to do in the first round to get them through.
So you had New York in 6?
I have New York in 6, and the points are actually 16-14 New York.
Okay. I had a real tough time with the series. I think this series is going to be very interesting. Going to be a real tight series. Another good matchup.
According to NBC, it'll be a nice rivalry too, although I'm not too
sure
keen on the rivalry part of it, but hey, they're close together and they're big markets, so it's a rivalry.
the Sabres and the Kings are on rivalry night because Dustin Brown's from New York.
Yes, precisely.
Okay, whatever you say, Pierre Maguire. Yeah, this one's gonna be tight. Overall, I picked the Rangers in seven games. I think that it's just gonna be a real tight series. And when you hear my puck breakdown here, you'll see why. I got six pucks going to the Bruins for offense. I think that they just have a little bit more firepower up front as far as their depth. Even their fourth line can really, I mean, you got Campbell and Paillet and Thornton. And I watched that they had a penalty kill last night. Paillet and Campbell were on for the penalty kill, and they had better chances than the Bruins had the entire game until the last 2 minutes. I mean, they were flying. Jágr's on their third line, so you see their depth, and they can explode, and I think they probably, that might get a momentum to get going a little bit.
With that note, do you think they should switch up the lines and put Jágr with some guys that look to make more plays instead of the get up the ice and shoot the puck kind of plays that he gets right now on the third line?
You could. I wouldn't, because I know that these lines are going to work right now, and they really need him more on the power plays where they need him to cash in.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay. And save his energy. He is getting older. Yep. So the extra ice time he saves, he can take down on the power play.
Yeah, he can't keep up for 20 minutes a night anymore the way Bergeron and Marchand need to go. Because even those guys go north and south. That's just the way the game's played these days.
True.
So six pucks go to the Bruins, four to the Rangers. Defensively, I gave both of these teams five pucks because the Bruins really do a good job of taking care of their own end. And they've got Zdeno Chara. Hello, Rick Nash. You're going to see a whole hell of a lot of that guy.
Hey, wait a minute. Chara was in front of the goal last night, and he's not the guy I expected to be there. What a guy to screen, though.
Yeah, no kidding. But to have him and Lucic in front of the net, you know.
Good luck to the other team's defensive team.
Yeah, and the all Rangers. Right, the Rangers, like you said, they just get in front of pucks all over the ice. So I gave both teams a five because I really couldn't tell you who has a better defensive team, honestly. Yep. And the Rangers have Callahan, a little bit of a man crush there, and the Bruins assistant coach is Doug Huda, who is my all-time man crush. So I couldn't knock Huda down below somebody else. Goaltending, I agree with you. I gave Lundqvist six and Rask four. Really was thinking about five and five, but I just think Lundqvist, at least he showed this last series that he can stand on his head in the playoffs, which he hasn't quite done in the past.
Yeah.
So I'm going Rangers in seven. And even though it's going to be on the road, I think they get it done. I think Boston starts out the series strong, and I think eventually Tortorella and company kind of figure out how to get it done.
And just a couple other little thoughts on this one. The Rangers won the series 2-1. Both of their wins came in overtime. And my other thought, my other reason for picking the Rangers in this one, I'm still not completely sold on Toronto. And Boston taking seven, I'm just not real sure that they beat a great team, and to take seven and all that extra time and energy to beat them, it's just going to pan out in the end, and I don't think it's going to benefit them.
Yeah. Western Conference. Moving on. Chicago beat your Minnesota Wild, but you, sir, picked correctly. You picked Chicago in five games, getting you the 3 points.
Can I have four for picking the day that they were going to win?
No, you're already beating me as it is.
All right.
You will take your three and go home.
I will. I'm already here.
Possibly feel shame. I took Chicago in four. I gave them the sweep. Didn't get it. Minnesota, you said you listened to their end-of-the-year press conference. We'll get into that a little bit later. You know, I think Minnesota should be all right in where they're at. I think Pominville was a nice piece to add, not necessarily just for this season, you know, because he's not a rental player. You got him for next year. And I think, you know, you got another a year of experience for a lot of those young guys.
11 players played their first playoff game.
Exactly. So they'll be all right. I think, you know, you're one or two pieces away from being a two or a three seed in the future.
Yeah. I might as well hit on it while we're here. Listening to that season-ending press conference, the Brass and the Wild organization, they took it in stride. Similar to what I had been saying, you know, they've got a lot of young kids. They weren't expected to do a lot in a shortened season, no training camp. So they really took it in stride and acknowledged the progress that was made throughout the year. They did acknowledge that it's not what they were there to do. They weren't there to just make the playoffs and lose out. But, you know, when you have your third string goalie play the equivalent of a whole game, what are you going to do? I mean, yes, you expect him to be good. But prior to the Buffalo trade, Kemper was the backup for the Arrows. You know, they had Hackett there, who was the starter. So he was way down, way, way down in the depth charts. You don't ever expect to have him play what amount to some pretty good minutes in the playoffs. Other thoughts that they had, Backstrom is going to have sports hernia surgery. I believe that was going to be Thursday. They didn't give Kemper as much praise as I would have thought in the press conference. There were a lot of questions asked about him, and I figured, you know, to hear some of the typical lines of, well, he really stepped in well for us and did what we asked him to do, that he didn't get any of those comments at all, really. They just said, you know, it's not the situation we expected to be in. He's only 23. Just a lot of stuff like that that I wasn't expecting to hear. I figured they would have given him a little more support.
Well, they've got to figure out what they're doing long term, because, you know, they traded away Hackett. So it appears to me that either they're going to re-sign Backstrom, because he's, what, an RFA at the end of the next year. Or they're going to hand it over to Kemper. So, you know, if I agree with you, I guess you would hope and you would think that they'd be pumping this guy's tires a little bit, you know, as far as who's going to be.
And he is young, too, you know, to step in. And yes, his first goal that he gave up was absolutely terrible. But it was the nerves. He didn't clench his arm down and it went right through him.
Yep.
But. The other thing they acknowledged was that they would sit down with Jason Pominville and have some talks this summer and try and get him signed on for a longer term than just next year. Well, Cal Clutterbuck and Matt Cullen are also free agents this summer.
You know, he's not going to sign unless he can get Jochen Hecht to sign with him, because, you know, he and Jochen Hecht are a tandem pair.
You must be Jochen.
Yeah. I'm yoking your chain.
Oh, what the hush. but yeah, that was it. Clutterbuck, you know, a fan favorite, but is he expendable? It depends on what kind of price he's asking, I suppose. He would be nice to have around, but he doesn't score many goals, and as it showed in the playoffs, they need some guys that can score.
Mm-hmm.
But watching Chicago in that series, other than rooting for the other team, they're just incredible to watch. They're deep, they're good, they've got goaltending, they don't have to rely on their goaltending, and they're just fun to watch. The other side of that matchup is Detroit there. I flipped back and forth a couple times while we were making our first round picks, I think, and trying to justify writing off the experience that Detroit had, and turns out I definitely should have.
You and a lot of other people were saying, man, I feel dirty picking Anaheim over Detroit. This isn't the right thing my mind is saying to me. So as we obviously happened, Detroit takes takes Anaheim in Game 7 on road ice. I found that to be very surprising, honestly.
Yeah, especially on that trip. It's not like they're close neighbors. You're going down to Southern California.
You and I both picked Anaheim in 5, and we're drastically mistaken.
Yes.
But
Detroit took 3 of 4 in overtime in that series. So
yeah, which goes to show that they, you know, they weren't. They got some breaks. They made some of their own breaks. You know, and I guess a little bit of puck luck. So, so we have Chicago and Detroit, a juicy matchup. This is definitely a rivalry matchup, I would say.
Yes, and that's part of the.
I mean, who's NBC gonna put it on? They got Sydney in one, but he's playing a Canadian team, so he might not be on there. You got New York Rangers and Boston. We all know that NBC drools over them, and you got Chicago and Detroit. NBC just loves them. I think Chicago is on NBC or NBC Sports the most out of any team this year. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with these. Who's getting the NBC or
NBC Sports coverage?
Yeah. Well, who's getting the CNBC?
Oh, we will see. This year, Chicago went 4-0 against the Red Wings. 3 of them were in overtime or shootouts, though. So they were close games all year. To me, the key to this series is going to be goaltending. Jimmy Howard played well, but to me, Chicago has the better ability to overcome any goaltending gaffes that they might have. I have Chicago winning this series in 5 games. My breakdown goes as the follows. I've got 7 pucks to Chicago for offense. I don't think that Detroit has the depth offensively. I think Chicago has all the forwards that can score, and they've got guys out on the point that aren't afraid to shoot the puck. So that one goes 7-3 to Chicago for me. Defensively, Chicago can play a defensive style as well as the run and gun. I split the pucks even on this one. I went 5-5. And then in goaltending, I gave a slight advantage to Chicago. I think a lot of that stems from the defensive portion of it, though. The defense plus the goalie. I gave 6 pucks to Chicago, 4 to Detroit. They've got help, and then if they do end up having to go to a backup, they've got Ray Emery in there, who was just sparkling this year. Total pucks, 18 to Chicago, 12 to Detroit. Like I said, Chicago in 5 for me.
Well, we got there in different ways, but we ended up with the same number. I'm going with Chicago in 5 as well. I'm going with 7 pucks to Chicago for offense. I think they're just, you know, they're getting Dave Bolin back. That's going to help offensively and defensively. I think that especially against Detroit's defense, because the lack of defense core, I guess, or that big studded defenseman to shut down Taves or Kane. You know, whatever line the lines they decide to throw out there is going to help, is going to be a big factor in the series. So Chicago gets 7 pucks there, and they also get 7 pucks from me on defense. Keith and Seabrook are outstanding. You know, enough's already said about them. But Johnny Oduya, Nicholas Chalmerson have become a real good second pairing for them. They've got Nick Leddy. And who's their 6 now? I just had his name on the tip of my tongue.
I don't remember.
I couldn't. Wow.
Minnesota didn't spend enough time in that zone to learn any other names.
So. But they've got enough talent there defensively. And it's also, again, like I said, the lack of talent and depth for Detroit that I think against Chicago, Detroit's defense looks worse than it is. But I have been wrong before. I think I said the same thing about Anaheim.
Yep. but Anaheim wasn't as balanced either.
Yeah. But goaltending, I'm giving 6 pucks to Detroit and 4 to Chicago. I think Jimmy Howard is the better goaltender than Corey Crawford. So that'll be the one spot I will give them more pucks. So that gives me 18 for Chicago and 12 for Detroit. Chicago in 5. And the Sun, the California matchup that West Coasters have been dreaming about. Gary Bettman's probably just smiling from ear to ear, and that two Sun Belt teams have made it to the second round for a Sun Belt matchup. We've got the LA Kings, who took the first round series against the Blues in six games. Otto, you got 3 points for that. You picked that perfectly. I took LA in seven, so I still get a point. LA was down 2-0 in the first two games of the series, pretty much because Jonathan Quick coughed up goals that we hadn't seen Jonathan Quick give up in the last year and a half.
And so, that was something we mentioned in our last podcast.
Yep.
It series easily could have been flipped as far as the games go.
And they kind of turned it on and didn't look back. So they won that series. And the other series, which was a big surprise, both of us missed on this one. We both picked Vancouver to take San Jose. And San Jose just basically manhandled Vancouver. And really, Vancouver was the team that just looked to be out of place in every aspect of it. The Sedins didn't score. Kessler didn't play defense. Bieksa didn't shut his mouth. And nobody could stop a shot.
Yeah. And even then, the goalies weren't the problem in this one. You know, they played okay, and they didn't get any help. So all the talk won't end anytime soon as far as the Schneider-Luongo goaltending dilemma goes. Nobody proved themselves as the guy. It's not pretty in Vancouver. Although no major changes have been made yet either as far as upper management goes.
Random thought. Do you trade Schneider instead of Luongo, knowing that you're not going to be able to trade Luongo or get fair value for him, but you can probably get a king's ransom for Schneider considering his contract, age, and ability?
You think so, though? I just don't know that the market's going to be there. There weren't that many teams looking at the deadline as there were. You got to imagine, yes, he doesn't have the age, but you got to imagine the Sabres are going to look to move Miller if they don't think they can sign him. You've got guys coming onto the market soon, like a Backstrom. There's just a lot of young guys around that you kind of wonder. In Pittsburgh, what happens as this series plays out? Does Fleury become available? Does somebody think that they've got the magic coach to turn his playoff woes around? Schneider hasn't proven himself enough to me to be worth it, but along the same lines, if you can get something big for him, do it in a heartbeat. You're not going to move along. Go. The best you're going to do is just pay out his salary, and he's out of there. So if you can get something for Schneider, do it. I just don't know if it's there.
Okay. Be much to be debated later on. A little nugget to chew on, I guess. So in this series, we've got the 6th seed taking on the 5 seed. LA, the 5 seed, gets home ice. LA just got on a roll last year and steamrolled San Jose as well as other teams. So
everybody else.
Everybody else, yeah, until they got to the finals. So as far as my puck breakdown, I'm going to give San Jose 6 pucks on the offensive matchup. Mostly because we didn't see that the lines clicking from LA the way we did last year, and maybe that'll change. But you got Jumbo Joe and Patrick Marleau up top on the first line. You've got Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski on the second and third line.
And they're all scoring points. A lot of these guys that you're used to hearing San Jose and say, well, you know what, he's not going to score.
Mm-hmm. And they got faster. They got rid of Ryan Klo and Douglas Murray on the back end there. But I just think that San Jose's got a lot of talent. And their power play, look out, in my opinion, if they're clicking. You know, but they have been known to choke the big one before. Defensively, though, I'm giving LA 8 pucks. I think that their defensive system is unreal from their center ice positions. Stoll and Kopitar and Richards are three of the best defensive centers. Kopitar and Richards are probably two of the best two-way centers. I don't think there's probably anybody other than Patrice Bergeron, who, in my opinion, who I'd rather take a face-off than Jared Stoll. I think he's one of the best defensive face-off men in the league. The addition of Robin Regier was huge because it allowed they finally found somebody to play with Drew Doughty, and then it bumped everybody else down back to where they belong because they lost Matt Green earlier in the year. Goaltending, I'm going to give Jonathan Quick 7 pucks and Antti Niemi 3, and that one I might be real wrong on because Niemi is a former cup winner, but he's good, but he's not great. And yep. Quick, you know, until I'm proven wrong, we're gonna ride the Quick train, I guess. So that gives me 19 pucks for the Kings and 11 for the Sharks, and I'm gonna take the Kings in 5.
My breakdown, just real quick. I agree with just about everything you said. Offense, I went 6 pucks to the Kings, 4 to the Sharks. Defense, same. Well, actually, I went 6 and 4 all the way down. Total of 18 to 12 for the pucks. I will take the Kings in 7 games, though. I think the Sharks have found something with what they're doing currently. So I think they get a couple here. Maybe they've been very successful at home. You can't really judge on the first round because they just wiped the Canucks right out. But I think the home ice makes a big difference in this series. That being said, I don't know that I will see a single game in this one unless they play a day game on a Saturday, because you know every start time is going to be 10 o'clock or later. But it should be a fun series to watch either way.
Absolutely. I guess I missed it. Who did you have in the Chicago-Detroit series?
I took Chicago in 5.
Chicago in 5 as well. All right. I guess I just didn't write it down. It was interesting. It'll be an interesting series. I think as far as travel goes, TV media goes, the only series that I think that teams aren't, or the league isn't drooling about is that Pittsburgh-Ottawa series. But honestly, I think that's going to be a great series myself. So
if nothing else, it's intriguing. You got to see, where do the Pens go from here? Does Fleury start game 1? Do they leave Volkunin? If they put Volkunin for game 1, what's the future of Fleury there?
I think a lot of
question marks.
I think they got to go Volkunin game 1, and if he loses, if they lose badly, then you can go back to Fleury. But I think if he loses a 2-1 game in overtime or whatever, you probably got to stick with Volkoon.
Yeah, it just, there's a lot of questions to be answered, so I don't know.
Absolutely. Moving down the ladder to the AHL playoffs. Just a quick update.
Just a quick run through here.
Yeah.
Coming up on our hour again here.
Yeah. Otto. Led Jay and I through the first round. Those picks are already on the barrelofsports.blogspot.com. And just a quick thing, Providence is leading Wilkes-Barre 2-0 going into Wilkes-Barre for game 3. Otto, that doesn't look good for you.
No.
Syracuse leads Springfield 2-0. That's going into Syracuse, so we could be seeing a sweep there, possibly. Western Conference, Oklahoma City leads Texas 2-1. That's in Oklahoma for the next 2. That was a series you picked Oklahoma for over Texas. And the Marlies and Griffins are tied 1-1. The Griffins came in and took a 7-0 victory in Toronto in game 1, and I chalked that up to Toronto was sitting around for a couple days, and yep. Grand Rapids just came off a 5-game series in which they won in game 5, So they were rolling, and Toronto didn't get their feet moving. But they righted the ship in Game 2, and that heads to Grand Rapids. Actually, tomorrow they play.
So. Just a quick note on these NHL games. The Kings series and the Pittsburgh series both start tonight. Chicago-Detroit starts tomorrow. Boston and the Rangers starts on Thursday.
Correct. I think it'll be interesting because that Boston and Rangers, they both played back-to-back game 6 and 7.
Yep.
Off day, back-to-back. And so both teams will be tired as opposed to one sitting around and the other one, you know, coming in hot, I guess, so to say.
And that's a smart move by the NHL to move that to Thursday. You want to make sure those teams get enough rest that guys aren't getting hurt.
Yeah, that was
two series back-to-back. You know?
Quick turnaround. How about, I don't know if you heard this, after Game 6 in Toronto, did you know that Boston stayed over in Toronto and then flew back to Boston yesterday morning, as opposed to league policy, where the CBA mandates that teams fly, they can't fly in the day of a game if they're flying, okay? So they have to get there the night before. But there was a malfunction, and so they stayed overnight.
Yeah.
Conspiracy?
I did hear that, and the funny part was that they didn't go to the airport either. They went straight to the hotel. So,
well, yeah,
they kind of wonder where that went.
Yeah, I think I smell a little bit of conspiracy. We've heard of teams before. I think of the Blackhawks was the most when they won the cup a couple years ago. I remember that they had struggled at home, so Joel Quenneville stuck them all in a hotel room to simulate going to a hotel or being on the road, and it, you know, obviously gave them some success because they won the cup that year, but. It didn't smell right.
Yeah, it's interesting. They were, for sure.
I was listening to the Toronto radio a little bit, because it's one of the blessings of living so close here in Buffalo is that you get those stations, and they were all crying foul that they were cheating the system, as they say. So,
as somebody always will.
Somebody always says, it's not that you're getting cheated, it's that somebody else is getting an advantage, you know.
Yes.
Yeah,
touching on the IIHF, I was up at 5 o'clock this morning to watch the U.S. fall not very prettily. They went strong in pool play. I put strong in quotation marks. They went 5-2, but they were not in the strongest grouping. France, Germany, Slovakia, they're not your typical strengths, powerhouses in the NHL, or in the World Tournament, whereas Canada's side, the four that got into the corner or the quarters were Switzerland, Czech Republic, Canada, and Sweden. So, not the strongest division. It's eerily similar to last year. Pool play, the U.S. went 4-2-0-1, and then bowed out in the first round of the elimination games. Not something you want to see happen, but something that's a very strong possibility again this year. The U.S. doesn't get off to strong starts. Their goaltending had looked good with John Gibson and what the heck? Ben Bishop. They looked strong early. Bishop just kind of fell apart this morning. Two mental errors put the U.S. behind in the first period, 2-0, and they just couldn't get going from there. Matchups in the U.S.'s side for the quarters, Finland plays Slovakia. Number two, Russia, plays the third seed U.S. U.S. could have been the one seed with a win this morning. Then in the other side, it's Swiss versus the Czech, and Canada versus Sweden. Those games will be on Thursday.
And I just saw Canada also added PK Subban.
Yes.
Norris.
Russia added Ovechkin. We're hoping that he does his typical playoff routine and just doesn't score. U.S., regardless, will have their work cut out for them here in this quarterfinal round against Russia.
As I said, PK Subban added to the Canadian roster. Also, sir, a Norris candidate. We covered that last time.
Yep.
But since our last discussion or episode, a couple other awards have come out. And we had the Hart Trophy nominees, which is the league MVP. Hart Trophy nominees this year are none other than Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, and kind of a surprise pick, John Tavares. Thoughts?
I wish that they would define this award. I know it's an uphill battle that everybody talks about, but I just wish that they would tell you, you know, it does depend on playoffs, it doesn't depend on playoffs. It makes a big difference. Crosby, I have a hard time voting for based on the results that his team has without him in the lineup.
Hi, I'm Phil Chenier.
Oh, not again.
A fan like I am.
The Pens just continued to roll.
You might win Wizards tickets, a suite at a Wizards game.
Technical difficulties?
Absolutely. I don't know. I'm trying to see the things on Puck Daddy, and that video pops up without me hitting play. Oh, well.
Ovechkin is going to be along the same argument. You know, he essentially missed the first half of the season. So I guess by default, it's Tavares. He did what he had to do and could do to get the Isles into the playoffs, and although it's not based on it, he did what he could to get the Isles to the next round of the playoffs.
I see your point. I don't see how it's anybody but Crosby. He look at the points he put up, man, were just unreal. And when he was healthy, and yeah, I see your point that he was out, but he's the best player in the game. And Tavares, yeah, he's the only guy on that team, but he doesn't look like an MVP, doesn't act like one, or, you know, Hart, whatever. But I just, real quick, their points. Crosby in 36 games had 56 points. Ovechkin had 56 points in 12 more games in 48 games. And Tavares is 17th. He had 47 points in 48 games, so he didn't even have a point a game. Now, not everything's based on points. I get that. But I just think Crosby's the pick. I would be, honestly, I'd be kind of disappointed if Tavares was the MVP.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't necessarily think that he should be. I do think it'll be one of the other two. I just don't know quite which way it'll go. It's Ovi and Crosby, as far as their teams go, are very similar to the success.
Yeah, and I guess the glaring absence from this one is Taves.
Yep.
I mean,
East Coast biased.
That and Taves or even Kane, you know,
anybody off of Chicago. But yeah, at the same time, it's those guys taking votes away from each other being on the same team.
But so, how does Malkin not take votes away from Crosby? You know, I think that it should have been Crosby, Tavares, and Getzlaf for the Hart nominees, and it probably still would have ended up being Crosby. But Ovechkin, it's all on his name and not on his production, in my opinion.
Absolutely. So, yes, I agree with that.
Other awards that came out, the Masterton Trophy, which is basically dedication to hockey, kind of a comeback player of the year, so to speak, I would say. And it's Adam McQuaid, Josh Harding, and the third one was, help me out there.
I believe it was Crosby, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Crosby. Crosby for his concussions, McQuaid for his, he had actually had a blood clot disorder that you didn't really know about. But this one's going to Josh Harding, hands down. There's no way you're going to deal with MS, come back and play with MS,
and lead your team to a playoff win.
Yep. And he was productive in the. I mean, he wasn't awful in the playoffs by any means.
He did what he needed. They needed offensive support, and you know, a couple more goals, and you never know, they're right back in it. So
if Crosby doesn't win the Hart, Crosby wins the Masterton.
Just for sympathy.
Yes, because Sid's got to be up on the trophy stand.
The other award that came out, Vezina Trophy. That would be Lundqvist, Bobrovsky, and Niemi. If it doesn't go to Bobrovsky, I don't know what else you have to do to win the Vezina. I think Lundqvist is there for his name. He didn't have spectacular stats this year. So I think if it's anybody but the Bob, it's odd to me.
Yeah, it's definitely going to Bob. His numbers are just, they're sick. So he's got to be the man.
And he carried that team within a day of the playoffs.
Absolutely. Any other thoughts before we call it a night?
Oshie and Kachelnik were sent to Team USA.
You want to try that again, Wish?
Yeah. Oshie.
Oshie.
I don't want to go that way.
Galchenyuk.
Galchenyuk. I had it earlier.
Yes, you did.
They were both sent over to USA. Didn't pay off today. Maybe another couple days of practice will help. Not looking good for an AHL team in Utica. We'll get to that another day once there's more details. Sounding like the players are getting closer to participating in the Sochi Olympics. I still would prefer that they're not there. But that's my own personal opinion.
Really?
I'd rather watch the kids. I like watching the World Junior Championships.
But we've got the World Junior Championships. What do you need another one for?
I'm okay with it.
Oh, goodness.
You get more college kids that way, too. World Juniors, the college kids are all still playing.
There's not enough time to have this argument.
Agreed. But that's my opinion. I don't know. They go over there for the money most of the time, and it just doesn't look good.
To be clear and honest to everyone who possibly listens or we hope is listening, this was unknown to me going into this. I had fully thought that Otto was of the same mindset as me as to the best players need to be in the Olympics, otherwise there's no sense having it. But clearly, I was mistaken.
Clearly we're going to have a versus moment.
Absolutely.
We'll get to that one, though, once the announcement's official that they're going.
Yep.
You had some brief news on a new, or...
Well, yeah, they're...
Revival.
Well, during this whole Sochi Olympics talk, Tretiak, Vladislav Tretiak, who was the goalie in 1980, when the bunch of college kids came from all around the U.S. to beat the Soviet Union... no, sorry. Try to be Jack Edwards for a second. He is now the hockey guru or international hockey guru president for Russia, and so he wants to get the World Cup of Hockey back, and that would not replace the Olympics, not replace any the World Championships, but just be another international tournament. Used to be in the fall. In September, leading into the NHL season, I remember watching the '96 World Cup of Hockey when Richter was playing for the U.S. and just falling in love with international hockey at that point. That was my first.
I love the size of international hockey.
Yeah,
watching these guys being able to wheel with the puck and not cluttered up in the neutral zone.
It's
true.
So they're working on that. No official word, just that he claims that they've got an agreement to do it, but you know, the only way I think they do it is if the NHL can get the money, much like the World Baseball Classic, where the Major League Baseball gets all that money.
Yeah, so. I would agree with that. It'd be cool to see regardless, though.
Absolutely. So, for that being said, we hope you enjoyed our sixth episode. Again, subscribe to us on iTunes, Through a Puck, and Barrel of Sports. or .blogspot.com.
Follow on Twitter at Barrel of Sports, OISN 25, and OISCN 25,
and DPRON 1 for myself. If you would like to hear about my pups and pregnant wife, which by the way, and my Braves. Oh, thank you, by the way, for Justin Upton.
Again.
I should.
You will never get old of telling me that.
I'll just continue to write you thank you notes, and I'll probably even write that on your wedding card. Thanks for Justin.
I won't be surprised.
So, until next time, enjoy playoff hockey and stay safe.
Thanks for listening.